The Drive is brought to you on demand by Assignar Construction Operations Software. Visit keepbuilding.com for a free demonstration and see how much your business can save.
Denver Sports Station 104.3 The Fan presents The Drive with Tyler Palumbus and T-Mac.
Gurkowski finds an open Jack Johnson. He's in a load and he scores!
This is not the matchup the Hawks want against this top level.
It went in! Time it was Eric Johnson who threw it towards the net. May have changed directions. And two goals in the opening 6 minutes for Colorado. Gabriel Landeskog throws the brakes on, finds Byram, and he scores! Number one in the NHL for Bowen Byram. Gerard, he has his pocket picked, and it's Kirby Doc on a breakaway. Doc, saved by Kemper. Turns out to be a 4-2 win on opening night for the Avalanche over Chicago.
Scott was on the hunt, wanted to change momentum, didn't like the way his team had played in the last few shifts after the Hawks' goal. On the forecheck, got on the hit, and then on the backcheck, hunted down Kirby Doc and hit him as well.
It was an awesome night. Awesome night at Ball Arena. And it was great to see the Avs win. And then the Landeskog hit is like, well, let's see what's going on. But we just talked to Dater, and he said, yeah, there could be some sort of suspension coming.
Yeah, it sounds like it won't be a major suspension, that if he gets suspended, it should be relatively short in length. I do think that the majority of people that have seen that video would agree that he needed to find a way to get away from the situation. You know, the guy was defenseless. He had his back turned. He had his knee on the ground. It's a moment that I don't think the Landeskog was intentionally trying to be dirty. Told a story earlier in the show of when I was in my second year, and I could relate to a moment like this. I really can, because sometimes when you're on the field, you got to make a split-second decision, and it's not always the right decision. And sometimes you make a decision, you know that you did something dirty, and you know you're going to have to live with the consequences of it. I firmly believe the Landeskog knows that he shouldn't have done that. Mm-hmm. Hindsight 2020, he shouldn't have done that. You know, my second year in the NFL, we had a fake 18 slip screen to the left. I went down three steps to the right. I'd go down hard down the line of scrimmage. It was the DT bubble screen. DT was steps back, catches the ball, and I realized that I'm like 4 or 5 yards away from it at this point, and I got to make a decision. My coaches have told me that under no circumstance can I try to stay up and block the defensive back. When you get out there, you throw at his feet, because if you try to stay up, he's going to out-athlete you. So I'm at a spot where I know that if I throw now, I'm likely to throw into the back of the guy's legs. And that's not going to be good. I'm going to risk injury. I'm going to get a flag. I'm going to lose money. If I don't throw, I'm going to get a missed assignment. I'm going to have my coaches yelling at me that I didn't put enough effort out there. And so I gambled. And I gambled that I could get my head in front of the guy, that I could get my head in front of the guy's legs. And I did not. My head landed directly in the back of this guy's legs. I was totally fearful that I just destroyed this guy's career. Thank God he popped up, no harm, no foul. However, I did have about 150 flags land on my face. And for the rest of the game, I got to think about the fact that I just lost my game check. Like, I was going to pay $15,000 for that moment because I didn't know what to do. Well, did I do that because I was trying to be dirty? Of course not. I did it because I was in the heat of the moment. I made a split-second decision. Turned out to be the wrong decision. That's what happened with Landy. He made a split-second decision. It was the wrong decision, but he's got to live with the consequences.
All right. Does it send a message to his teammates and other teams in the NHL that this isn't the same Avs team that rolled over four straight to
a little bit.
Vegas?
Yeah, a little bit. That might have been what was going on there. You know, Landeskog might have gone into that game saying, we know what everybody thinks of us. We know what the expectations are. We know that there's going to be cheap shots that come our way. We know that we've got superstars. And we're not as deep as we were last year either. So we got to set the tone that we're the team that's going to be physical. You want to play the Avalanche, you got to deal with us. We're going to be the ones that are bringing it to you. Don't bring anything dirty to us. Unfortunately, he did something that was dirty. But, you know, you bring something dirty, you can expect that we're going to have an answer for you. And it does feel like throughout the preseason that Landeskog went into this season just saying, hey, I'm going to be physical. I'm going to be the aggressor. You could see it during the preseason games. He dropped gloves a few different times. He has been very aggressive so far this year.
Then we hear about a little issue with the Broncos. And, you know, Vic Fangio confirmed that there was what he called a dust-up. And Ed Donatell, you know, said that that happened as well, but it wasn't really that big of a deal. What do you make of that? Here's Donatell.
Coach Fangio said there was a dust-up with the defense. What was the nature of that incident?
Yeah, just nothing. Just a little disagreement. Things you work through, you know, in the football world.
Okay.
Well, here's the deal. We don't know a lot about this particular situation, but we know enough to say that this is concerning. Here's what we know. We know that there was an issue. There was some sort of fight. There was some sort of argument. We know that it was amongst two defensive players. So not an offensive guy, not a defensive guy. I literally wouldn't even be able to count the amount of fights that I've seen on a football field that is offense versus defense. Wide receiver versus DB. O-line versus defensive tackle. So on and so forth. Running back versus linebacker. That happens every single week, every single year, every single team I've ever been on.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say that I've never seen fights amongst the same side of the ball. Or even in the same positional group, but it's very, very rare. The most recent example that I have is what happened with Emmanuel Sanders and what happened with Cortland Sutton.
Mm-hmm.
They got in a fight out of practice. Wide receivers getting in a fight. That was weird. That is totally unusual.
The nature of that, too, was you haven't done anything. It was like right. Sanders yelling at Sutton, who do you think you are? You
sure.
haven't done anything. It was kind of about work ethic, by the way. It was like how you're executing things, how things are happening out there at practice was the gist of the issue.
Right.
That Sanders was getting on Sutton, and Sutton just didn't want to put up with it.
Well, I have seen a handful of situations like this pop up, particularly when I was playing out in Washington. We did have a couple of offense-on-offense situations, a couple of defense-on-defense situations. And here's when it pops up. When stuff is bad.
Mm.
When things are not going well and when fingers are getting pointed.
Okay.
So when you're out there on the practice field and you watch something on film that you're like, hey, man, you got to fix that. You exposed me. You put me in a bad spot because you didn't do your job. Now I look like a fool on national television. You did it again in practice. Now I'm ticked off, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you get in a fight amongst the same side of the ball, I can almost guarantee you. Look, I can't guarantee it because I wasn't there, but I would bet a lot of money that whatever was going on in that conversation was in regards to somebody telling somebody that they were not doing their job the right way. And that only happens when things are going bad.
You know, it was interesting yesterday because Justin Simmons was kind of like a no offense Friday sort of thing, like no offense, but the fans don't know what they're talking about. And he wasn't trying to say it in sort of a mean way. He was saying it more of a, you don't know what the situation was, what the call was, what the responsibilities are.
What is he referring to? I'm sorry.
Criticism of him and his how does he respond to it? The whole social media stuff, kind of along those lines. There's been a message, Tyler, over and over and over again this year about ignoring social media and the noise from the outside. I mean, that has been talked about endlessly. In fact, we'll have Pat Shermer talking about here in a second. And Simmons was just like, with you know, all due respect, no offense. You don't know what the fans don't know what they're talking mm-hmm. about.
I bet you Justin Simmons is frustrated right now because he's getting exposed and he's looking like he's not playing good football.
Right.
And I don't think he is playing the type of football that his contract says he should be playing. But something tells me that there's something deeper going on. I mean, I look at what's going on in the secondary and I see guys that are just running scot-free between the zones. Is that always Justin's fault? It looks like it's been his fault a couple times. I'm mm-hmm. not going to lie. It does look like it's been his fault a few times. Has it been his fault every single time when he lets his guy cross over into Kareem Jackson's half of the field and Kareem Jackson isn't where he thinks he's going to be, where Justin thought he was going to be? I doubt it. I doubt that every single time it's been his fault. So when Justin gets up in front of the cameras and when he's talking to the media and he says, you guys don't know what you're talking about, he's talking about there is some sort of communication that is not going on in the manner that it's supposed to amongst our defense right now.
Well, Pat Shermer talked again today, and Kliss did ask Pat about scrutiny. Like, what's it like as a offensive coordinator compared to a head coach in terms of criticism, scrutiny, that sort of thing? And here's what Shermer said.
I think it's, you know, there's scrutiny on all of us all the time, you know, and I think it's the pendulum swings, you know, the first 3 weeks. If you're a team that's winning games, you know, things are mostly good. There's still things you're going to talk about or you're going to cherry pick that need to improve. But when those things happen and you lose games, then the pendulum swings the other way. So we're used to that. That's why we don't try to consume all the stuff outside the building. We just keep grinding. There's 17 games. We played five. this point, we got a winning record, and so we put all our focus on the next opponent. And that's just the way we all function. I'd love to read all your stuff, you know, but I think I just can't do it, you know, and I won't do it. And I really have never done it. I'm sure it's all tremendous, you know, but, you know, we just, and we know that. And you know, and I think, you know, you play a game and then there's a lot of build up to the game. The game's over and there's still like what happened in the game. Then you build up to the next one. So I get all that. That's part of our business. But from the inside out, I think you're just smart not to consume it.
Hey, man, you know that stuff rolls downhill. And when Vic Fangio is getting asked questions, well, he's going to talk about those things in meeting rooms. And when Pat Shurmur says that he doesn't read all the articles, I buy that. He probably doesn't read all of the articles. I bet he reads some. I bet he hears some of the conversation.
Felt like it this past week, didn't he?
And I know this. Whether he reads the articles or not, he's asked the questions that the articles are being written about. So he knows the subject.
You can tell.
He knows exactly what is going on.
Right.
And when things are not going well, it's easy to say we're not going to pay attention to what's going on the outside. But 100%, Pat Shurmur is aware of what's going on the outside.
Yeah, I mean, last week was the Pat Shurmur run the ball inquisition.
Sure.
And he'd be...
And rightfully so.
It was obvious.
He deserved it.
And then what happened on Sunday? I mean... Run, Dan Orlovsky was critical. Oh, it's just run, run, pass.
Yeah, I still struggle with that. I mean, Pat didn't change who he was. Like he might have done a few things to try to appease people that think that he doesn't run the ball enough, but he never made a commitment to running the ball. He never used the right personnel. He never put the right X's and O's out there to say that I know that I can have a call it and run it run play right now, that they can't get us out of it because I've got an X for an O that is out there on the field right now. When you try to run the ball out of 11 personnel, dude, you're half committed. What you really want to do is you're almost hoping that you go out there, you call a run, they load up the box, and they force you out of it. Seriously, that's what you're hoping. You're hoping that they load up the box because that gives you a weakness somewhere else that you could throw the football.
Well, I want to get back to that in just a second because it was interesting to see how he kind of wanted to move the focus off of something on to something else. I'll give that a second. But near the end today, just again, it was trying to be a little bit lighthearted because he says he doesn't read anything. So it's often kind of funny when you ask a question in kind of a lighthearted manner. Sometimes, Tyler, you get a serious answer when you actually don't expect it. So it starts lighthanded, but it goes...
If you're not reading all of our stuff, what are you reading?
scouting reports. You know, by the end of the night when I sit down to read... Which I really love to read, but it's about 5 minutes and I do this. So
that's the reaction most of us get to, though.
Yeah, no, reading is a good thing.
Is that right?
Maybe I'll consume it all at once the season's over.
As long as Google.
So he's laughing about it, but then he goes on to talk more about the pressure from the outside.
I don't really. I'm not a very social media savvy guy. I mean, I just don't consume it. I don't see the point in most of it, quite frankly. I mean, I still use a pencil. You know? I really mean that. I think, you know, sometimes, you know, it bothers me to see, and you have to use it for your jobs, but when a group of people get together and nobody's speaking because they're all looking at their phones, I just sort of think there's something wrong with that. I really do.
It's called family dinner.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I love her to death, but I really don't even call my wife that much, you know. But when I see her, it's just great, you know.
What are we talking about right now?
I just have...
Seriously, what are we talking about?
It's just never been my thing.
What's never been your thing? Calling your wife? Yes. What's never been your thing?
We went into some weird...
I don't even know what he's answering there anymore. I really don't. He lost me. He lost himself. He doesn't even know what he's talking about. You know, he was trying to take a shot at the media, and then he started to back off.
Yeah.
That's what he was really doing. He was starting to say, like, you guys don't know what you're talking about, and I read it sometimes, and it takes me off. But right. I know that you got a job to do. You got your hands, you got your faces down in your phones. You're not really listening to what I'm saying here.
Yeah. He's backtracking, you think?
But then, you know, since I'm throwing you all under the bus, I guess I might as well throw my wife under the bus. I might as well, you know, make her mad. I don't even call my wife. Like, I kind of like her, but, you know, I'm on the same page as you guys.
He loves her to death. You know, when I see her.
Right.
Love her to death.
Right.
I just think this is an inside glimpse of how stressful.
It's hard.
Yes, I'm feeling more sympathy for Dan Campbell, by the way. But how, and man, John Fox always said, you're always a two-game losing streak from getting fired.
Sure.
And man, it is, you can feel it. There's a little dust up. You have, you know, I love my wife comments here. I use a pencil. I don't pay attention. I mean, I'm wearing an Avalanche jersey of a player. I have no idea who it is. Like, hey, man, we're trying here. Mm-hmm. We're trying here, and it's amping up to kind of this crazy collision with a longtime rival on a day Mike Shanahan is going to be honored.
Yeah.
Woo!
Dude, there's nothing more stressful than being in a losing streak inside the NFL. It sucks. It just sucks. It's miserable. Coaches are miserable. Players are miserable. Secretaries are miserable. Honestly, media is miserable. Media, for the most part, there's a few guys out there. I know who they are. There's a couple guys out there that they revel in this stuff. They like when the team gets to this point. And you probably know who they are, too. But the majority of the media, they don't like this.
No.
They don't want to go up there and ask uncomfortable questions.
No.
It's just not fun. It sucks. It's a stressful environment. I don't feel bad for anybody. You're getting paid millions of dollars to play a kid's game. And I always kept that in perspective. As hard as things got, I just reminded myself, man, I'm getting to play a game. And when you do that, you've got an opportunity to come out the other side of that black hole. But when you get stuck in that black hole, it's real easy for that to turn into a vortex. And that's why I say this game right now against the Las Vegas Raiders, this game, if you drop it, it will be a vortex that you cannot get out of.
I believe you. Romy was great today. Romy, and you're right. People are not like out to get. The questions are not like, you know, you're the worst thing in the world. We're out to get you. It's not like that at all. It's kind of like, well, hey, guys, what about this? So Romy just points out, well, why not just be in a no-huddle offense a little bit more often? You know, and Shermer.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good thought. You know, I think there are times when we'll do that. But we're in what we call save mode. We're down by two scores, so you go a little faster. It's not truly no-huddle, but we're executing at the line of scrimmage, and our guys did a good job with that. But yeah, I mean, it's something you can, you know, something to think about.
There you go. Thanks, Romy. Appreciate it. Like, this is where we're at right now. When the media is like spitball. Hey, put Justin Simmons out there. Well, that sounds like a pretty good idea.
Right.
Romy, hey.
Well, guess what?
How about no huddle more often? You know, that's a good thought.
We wouldn't be having this conversation if you didn't drop a game you shouldn't have dropped to the Pittsburgh Steelers. So plain and simple, nobody would be miserable. Nobody would be doubting you. Nobody would be questioning your game plan. If you just dropped the game to Baltimore and then you did what you're supposed to do, get back into your winning ways, you beat a bad Pittsburgh team, guess what? Things aren't miserable. But when you lose games to teams that are bad at football, life gets miserable, and that's what you earn. When you lose those games, you earn this. You earn the right to be right here, right now.
All right, last one. Here's where Shermer's really pointing the finger at.
It's everything. You know, we got a young offense. I was told today it's the third youngest offense, and we got some growing pains that we're going through, but we're playing better in a lot of areas. There's just some areas we got to continue to get better at, you know. We speak to the third downs because they're somewhere longer, but we're 8 for 9 on fourth down. Maybe that's what we do. Get close and go for it on fourth down. That still keeps drives alive. So, you know, there's,
it's funny.
You know, when you're
it
working
busts.
With young.
I mean, seriously, that's funny. And I know he's saying that in jest. Of course, he's talking about fourth downs. Like, we've got a good record. Maybe we ought to just get to fourth down. You know what? In all seriousness, I do firmly believe 100% that Vic Fangio's plan of attack this year was to be aggressive on fourth down. Mm. But he has not been given the opportunity to be aggressive on fourth down. So, Pat, offense, it's on you. You want to go for it on fourth down? Give yourself the opportunity. You can't be in 3rd and 8 because your coach can't go for it when you're in 3rd and 8.
But they have the 3rd youngest offense in the league.
Yeah, I don't care. You chose those guys.
Players.
You have the ability.
And a lot of new players, you just got to keep grinding and keep being very positive. You know, we're a last play from tying the game possibly with a 2-point play. So we just got to keep grinding. And I think that's the message.
And he really spent time pointing out, Tyler, the when they got to the 2 yard line, when Javonte Williams got to the 2 yard line, and then they got the penalty, and then he pointed out on the play that Teddy got sacked on, Noah Fant was wide open. You know what he's saying?
And you know what?
We had it. We had it. We just blew it. We were right there. We had it. We were doing the right things. The game would have been completely different, and we just missed these opportunities.
Hey, man, I don't like it. I don't like the vibe that's going on right now. You're 3-2. If you would have said that before the season, you would have been like, hallelujah, we're 3-2. We've got everything in front of us. You won 3 games in a row, and you've dropped 2 right now. These coaches need to be setting the tone. What's happening is you're setting the culture for the building to feel miserable, and now you've got defense fighting amongst defense. Players are fighting amongst players, because when the culture is set that we're in a miserable spot, you will be miserable. What you should be doing is you should be saying we're 3-2. We've got everything in front of us. We're playing the Las Vegas Raiders, and they've got distractions. So you think we've got problems, fellas? Think what they're going through. This is our opportunity to right the ship. Let's go. We're 4-2. Everything's in front of us.
All right, more of your reaction to this. More audio from Dove Valley. Avs win, which is good, but what will happen to Landeskog? We'll see. And in the water cooler, Tyler, a classic big guy, small guy turf battle. Happened last night. Details next.
Hey guys, Tyler Palumbus here to tell you about my new friends at Assignar. Colorado contractors get paid faster and save big time money with Assignar managing their construction operations. From instant crew and equipment scheduling to digital time tracking and forms, contractors using Assignar are averaging $30,000 per year in savings. Collect data from the field to make informed decisions from the office with Assignar platform and mobile app. Go to keepbuilding.com to request your free demonstration of Assignar and see how much your business can save.
It's time to take a trip to the water cooler.
Is this good for the company?
We need to talk about your TPS reports.
Did you see the memo about this?
We find it's always better to fire people on a Friday.
If you could just go ahead and make sure you do that from now on, that would be great.
Here's Tyler and D-Mac.
What would you say you do here?
The code of the big guy versus the little guy.
Hey, real quick, before we get into the big guy, little guy thing.
Yes.
It's always bothered me. When we all agreed that the best day to get fired would be Monday.
What are you talking about?
Like, fire me on Monday. I don't want to work the week. Don't make me work the whole week and then fire me on Friday. Fire me on Monday. Can I tell you how many times I've seen guys get fired after practice? Like you knew you were going to fire that dude. You knew that you were going to, he was out of here, but you made him go out to practice because you needed a body that day.
Can I give you the, I've been fired from jobs significantly 7 times. 8's probably moments away. Who knows what time it is? But I was done.
We're kind of like in this together right now.
So. Yeah, that's what they all say.
Right.
I'm down in the Springs, which I hated being there anyways. This is no doubt where I was done the dirtiest ever in my 34 years of radio. No doubt about it. And at a small market like Colorado Springs, I was on a music station at the time, but I was also working at the Fan. It was kind of this crazy. Well, it was a long day, and I was about to go on vacation. I was going on vacation because on the Fan, we were going to go cover the Super Bowl in Miami. So I was actually working, but I mean, I was going to be off from Colorado Springs. I was a music programmer. By the way, in radio, there's one guy. They program all the music. That's just the way it goes. Or maybe they don't even. But somebody's got to sit there and plug all the songs in. Well, it takes time. And I was going to be gone for 10 days. And every day of music probably takes an hour and a half, 2 hours.
Yep.
So to get 10 days ahead is, I mean, kind of brutal. You generally stay like 2 or 3 days ahead. You don't stay 10 days ahead. So I had to kill myself to be able to be that far ahead. This is down in Colorado Springs. So these guys in Colorado Springs, you say, why didn't you just get fired? I'm like, first of all, I had to drive down there.
Right.
Right?
Like, just tell me on the phone. I know.
Totally.
Hey, by the way, when you tell me to bring my playbook, I know what that means. Like, right.
I don't need to go.
Do I really have to talk to the GM?
Yeah.
I brought my playbook.
Yeah.
I'll put it in the dumpster and then I'll walk out the building, okay?
That's right.
Just give me my trash bag.
That's right. So I go down there the whole week. They know they're going to fire me, as I found out. It's Friday. I'm about to leave. I am like 15 minutes from walking out the door. I have killed myself to get 10 days ahead, and they come in and they blow me out. But they waited intentionally until they knew all that stuff. So they didn't
have all the work they possibly could.
So they didn't have to worry about anything for 10 days.
Right.
And they just said, they just looked at their watches. Well, it usually leaves around there. And then
you know what, D-Mac, moral of the story? You got to be the man. You can't work for the man. You got to be the man. Huh?
Let me tell you something, too. When they fire you, the quicker you can leave, the better. Oh, my God. I was so pathetic. I was like, well, I need time. I need to pack this up and pack. Are you kidding
me? What did you need, really?
Nothing.
Was there anything that, print some new pictures?
Who knows? But I was stupid. I had an office. Right. I set everything up. I had a bunch of crap that I thought meant something. It's like, if they ever fire you, just walk out the door, say, mail it to me. You know, never keep anything that valuable at work. You notice what I keep here at work, right?
I mean, I've never had an office anywhere I've been. I've had a locker that was just full of clothes that I just dumped it all into a trash bag and I moved on, right? And then I've had, well, a microphone. That's it.
Yeah, but it's not even your microphone. Microphone.
Life goal, trying to go my whole life without writing a resume. So far, I'm doing good.
Good for you. Yeah, big guy, little guy. So I got to the Avs game just a little bit late. I got there like at the end of the first period. Had some stuff at home, whatever. Got there, whatever. I go to sit down, and the guy that my seat, they had a seat. They were great. The Avs PR were fantastic. Treated me with, they were amazing. Absolutely terrific. But the dude who was sitting next to me, worked for some website or something, I don't know. He had so much stuff laid out, Tyler. I couldn't see the nameplate, like where I was supposed to sit, because he had all of his stuff all over the place.
It's like Vic Fangio in the press box. Like that's why Vic wants to go back, so he can lay all of his stuff out everywhere.
And they came up to me because I sat and I couldn't find a place to sit. It was packed. It's and I'm fine, whatever. I'm not complaining. And I sat down and do you see the picture I posted? My seat was, I'm actually looking through polls. I'm looking through posts.
Right,
this, you got to be kidding me, but I'm not complaining. Hey, if this is what it is, it's fine. I'm happy to be there.
Let's keep it real. When you posted that picture, the only intent of posting that picture was to complain. So don't act like you weren't complaining. You literally would not have posted the picture unless you were trying to complain.
Well, I found an element of humor to it and go from there. Well, they come and tap me on the shoulder. They must have seen the tweet. They go, oh, no, Darren. You're down here. You see, you're on the list. And I go, okay. I didn't notice where to sit because the guy's stuff was covering up like where the little nameplate. I couldn't see it.
Yeah.
And he had a plate of like Mexican rice and refried beans. And it was a Mexican theme.
See, Mexican again. Here it comes.
It was just like garbage.
That's what it all was. All food, huh?
It was just laid out all over the place.
Who was it?
I don't know. He didn't say a word to me.
Do you think that he knew that he saw your nameplate and he was like, if I cover it up, maybe he won't sit next to me?
That's where I was going. It felt to me like you're on an airplane and you're walking down the aisle late.
Yeah. I mean, I got to get my arms on that armrest before anybody else sits down.
I felt it was the code of the big guy, small guy.
Sure.
I felt like this is a moment right now. If I spread enough of my stuff out, nobody will sit next to me. I'll have more space.
Like, you are the small dude, so you should have defaulted, right? Like, when I sit on a plane, and if I get in an armrest battle with a small dude, inside my head, I'm thinking, you're probably the worst human being on planet Earth. you really might be the most selfish human being on planet Earth. Do you see me? Do you see what I'm going through on this plane right now? And you're going to go through an armrest battle with me? I could totally see you going through an armrest battle on
a
plane.
No, I give that up a long time ago. Are you kidding? When we were in Cleveland, where did I sit every single time we got in the car?
Well, you sat in the four-letter word area.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Four-letter word seat. Yeah.
Back. Because Parker was there. How tall is Parker? Is he a real human being? He might be a real human being. Oh, Parker might be 6'4".
But he's a weird. Yes.
What do you mean he's weird?
He's real, but he's a weird, real human being. Because
what does that mean?
Like, he meets the height threshold, but just the overall, like, how many hamburgers have you eaten in your life? Like, he doesn't meet that threshold, you know? Like he's got the height, but he's seriously 185 pounds soaking wet.
Yeah. Yeah. But about 6'4", 6'5".
I'm not sure if Parker does meet the threshold or not. I mean, he meets the height part, but I mean, come on.
I had to laugh. I mean, the whole thing was comical, and the guy didn't say anything to me. But I was thinking about you. What happens when you walk on a plane, right, and you're one of the last ones on the plane? The horror of other people as
Please
they see you.
Please don't sit by me.
Can you feel that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I sit right, and then I sit right smack dab next to him. And the
all right, right. Do you feel like if you're late on a plane?
I mean,
there's only middle seats left.
Yeah.
And you come up and you say, can I sit there? Do you think automatically the guy on the end should sit in the middle?
Well, I never want the window seat ever.
Okay.
So I'd rather be in the middle than the window.
Is that right? Really?
Because the window, I got my shoulders crammed in on me. I got somebody on my left. I feel claustrophobic. In the middle, at the very least, I can claim both armrests as long as I've got decent human beings next to me, right? So in the middle, I'm just like, I take up my space. And I'm like, I'm big. This is who I am. Like you're just going to have to deal with it. So most of the time in that situation, and it does pop up every now and then, like when our employer doesn't pay for early bird seating. Not that happened on this trip or anything. Oh, there's Parker right now. What do you know?
he's a weird human being.
He's been listening this whole time. He's been paying attention. So like when your employer doesn't pay for early bird seating, which you just assume they're going to do, well, then you end up in C and you got to get on the plane, right? So when I walk down that aisle, I mean, I don't ask for permission. First off, I sit down, but I do apologize. And I just say, hey, listen, I'm sorry. This flight's about to suck for both of us. Yeah, you got the short end of the stick here, but it's going to be miserable for me, too, if it makes you feel any better.
Oh, too funny. All right, Brandon Staley. Brandon Staley. Did we let a special coach get away from the Broncos and Brandon Staley? Wait till you hear his response about John Gruden. It was amazingly unique. That's next.
It's The Drive with Tyler Palumbis and D-Mac on Denver Sports Station 104.3 The Fan.
Hey, what do you know about Brandon Staley?
You know, it's funny. We were talking about Brandon Staley before the show today, Richie and I were, and it is amazing to think that this dude was on our staff. And nobody had any idea who he was. I mean, really, nobody. I didn't hear Vic Fangio talking about him. I didn't, you know, most of the time when you've got like an up-and-comer, head coaches, they kind of prop him up because you usually need to prop up your guys in order to help them get jobs, right? So it's just part of your responsibility as a head coach. You bring somebody in and you start telling the world, hey, you better pay attention. You got Brandon Staley on this staff. I'm telling you, he's going to be the next up-and-comer. Dude. Nobody had heard anything about this guy. I mean, I'm going to pull up Brandon. One second here.
Sure.
I'm going to pull up his Wikipedia here because I looked at it this morning. And it's actually unbelievable. His just rise to ascension is something that, I mean, it makes Steve Scangarello look like he was on the fast track. I mean, listen to this. So he, as a coach, started his career in 2006 at Northern Illinois as a graduate assistant.
Mm-hmm.
He never even really played football, for the record. He played a little bit in college, but it was
a slender, skinny sort of. He doesn't look like a football guy.
Well, he played 2 years at the University of Dayton. Okay, so played two years.
All right.
But then he went as a grad assistant to Northern Illinois. Then he was at St. Thomas. Where's that, D-Mac? I don't know. You know where St. Thomas is?
I know it's in the Virgin Islands.
Okay.
You did not go to St. Thomas in the Virgin Islands.
No, I think it's a school in America.
Okay, is my best guess.
All but right. He was there for 1 year as the defensive line coach. Then where does he go? He goes to Hutchinson. Where's Hutchinson, D-Mac?
No clue.
Ever heard of Hutchinson?
Is it in New York?
I don't know. Not a clue.
No idea.
But he's the associate head coach / defensive coordinator. So he's got that role for 2 years. Then he goes back to being a grad assistant because he's going to go back to the big leagues, right? So he was bouncing around all these small schools. And so now he's a grad assistant back at Tennessee. Well, I don't know if the big schools.
Big school, at least. I mean,
I don't know if big schools are for me. Next year, I'm out of here. I'm going back to the small school. Defensive coordinator, James Madison.
Okay? I've heard of James Madison, though.
Where does he go from James Madison, a school that everybody around here knows, John Carroll?
John Carroll.
Right. Okay. So
you should explain why we all know that.
Well, that was Josh McDaniels in London Fletcher. That's how I know it.
There you go.
Okay, so from 2006 to 2016, he's bounced around for 10 years.
He's
been at all these small, no-name schools that literally we don't even know where they are. You would have to look it up to know where they are.
Right.
So he's got 10 years in coaching underneath his belt, but he really hasn't had a significant stop anywhere.
Lots of desire, though.
Somehow, some way,
a lot of motivation.
From John Carroll, he gets plucked by Vic Fangio to go to the Chicago Bears.
Okay.
And now he gets picked up to be the outside linebackers coach. All right. Goes two seasons with the Bears, over to the Broncos. 2019, outside linebackers coach for the Denver Broncos. 2020, defensive coordinator for the Los Angeles Rams. Mm. 2021, head coach of the Chargers. Dude, he's only been in the NFL for 4 years.
And what's amazing he has so much poise, and he has essentially the same team Anthony Lynn has. I mean, essentially.
Sure.
So why are they, so what difference does a coach make? Well, if the Chargers aren't the top team in the NFL, they're in the top five. They're on everybody's lips. And he's had a couple of things that have just gone viral with his responses to things. This answer to the John Gruden question was, well, it's gone viral. It has millions of views. This response he has to the John Gruden situation, what is it, 1.5, 2 million? I don't know, something like that. So here it is.
Yeah, you know, I think this is what I think about it. You know, I think that respect and trust in this world are really, really difficult to achieve. And I think about all the people that were affected by those emails, whether you're a person of color, whether you're a person, you know, a gender, your sexual orientation, the people that were affected by those emails, that's who I'm thinking about, you know, because it's a sacred mantle for someone to call you coach or someone to call you a leader. And trust is really, really hard to achieve in this world. It's really, really challenging to achieve. And especially with people with those groups that I just mentioned. All right. And people are really guarded. All right. And they're skeptical of people because of emails like that. And I just think that, you know, kindness and lifting people up and respecting people you don't know. I just think that, you know, that's such a big part of our thing here is listening to people and learning about people, because I think what you'll discover is that we have so much more in common than not. And I think that, you know, for someone like me, you know, it's just incumbent upon you to set the example every single day so that people that were, you know, talked about in those emails, that they don't need to feel that way. They shouldn't feel that way. And it's, you know, hopefully, you know, all of us can learn from this, that it's about bringing people together for me so that people can become, you know, the people that they dream about. And I think that, you know, for me, you know, leading this football team and being someone, hopefully we can, you know, be a light for those people in those emails, that not everybody's like that, that there's far more people that will love you than the opposite. And hopefully this will be a chance for everybody to come together instead of go apart.
You know, D-Mac, he sounds almost more like a college head coach than he does an NFL head coach. Mm. Because he's not afraid to talk about life subjects. I would imagine every single head coach in the NFL was asked some question about mm-hmm. John Gruden this week,
yep,
right?
Yep.
We don't have a ton of clips that are going viral, even though we know that everybody's been asked about it. Because I would imagine the majority of coaches handled it as quickly and as swiftly as they possibly could, and they got back to football. My experience with college versus NFL head coaches is that college coaches, they want to deal with life. They want to be, like, part of the reason why they're coaching in college is because they want to be able to be that second parent, to be able to mold an 18-year-old when they left home, and they really still need a father presence in their life, and they enjoy just, you know, helping to turn a young man into a mature adult. He sounds like a dude that is approaching the NFL like a college coach. Mm. Like, he didn't shy away from the subject. He didn't hide from the subject. I don't think he prepared for that subject.
It's,
I think it just
response.
Came off natural. It right. was easy. And it's very clear from the few examples that we've had recently that, yeah, now I know why they hired him. Seriously, when they hired Brandon Staley, I was thinking to myself, what the hell did the Chargers just do?
Yep.
Who is this dude? Look at his Wikipedia.
Right.
What has he done, and how has he proved that he's capable of being an NFL head coach? Well, get in a room with that dude and tell me you're not going to be impressed.
Oh. Sounds like a leader. Is he calling plays? Is he,
I think, yes, he's calling defensive plays.
He is, huh? Okay. All right, well, hey, man, he's got it. I think he's got it. It makes the Chargers even more dangerous. I'm just blown away. I did not realize we had a guy like this, like, as part of this organization. I mean, I kind of sit here and, like, how did he get away?
I mean, isn't that amazing to think that he was here and nobody even knew who he was?
It's incredible.
Didn't even know his name. Didn't know what he looked like. I guarantee you there are a lot of NFL fans that if you saw Brandon Staley at the bar, you wouldn't have any clue that you were sitting next to him.
No way. Maybe one of the best young coaches I don't even know how young he is. How old is he? What's his age?
Well, it's
38? He's only 38?
Clearly, he looks like he's a good coach.
Wow.
And he probably is a good coach. I don't know that. What I do know is that he's definitely a good leader, right? And if you're a good leader, and as long as you know how to hire the right coaches, you're going to have a successful program.
Interesting stuff. All right, football at four. Some of the key matchups that are pending with the Broncos and the Raiders. We'll dig into them next.
Hey guys, Tyler Palumbus here to tell you about my new friends at Assignar. Colorado contractors get paid faster and save big time money with Assignar managing their construction operations. From instant crew and equipment scheduling to digital time tracking and forms, contractors using Assignar are averaging $30,000 per year in savings. Collect data from the field to make informed decisions from the office with Assignar platform and mobile app. Go to keepbuilding.com to request your free demonstration of Assignar and see how much your business can save.